Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are tuned to the Sitting in the Park show. Right now, we are going to be doing an interview with members of the Gary, Indiana Group, The Passions. Guys, can you hear me?
Yep. Yes, I can.
Okay, great. So this is the second time we've tried it. Unfortunately, it is working this time. So first of all, thanks so much, you guys, for doing the interview and being on the air. This is the first group from Gary that I'm talking to on this show. So and right now we have two guys on the phone, one in Gary and one in California, right?
That's right.
So you guys, you want to introduce yourselves?
Go ahead, Roosevelt.
My name is Roosevelt Christmas. I'm in... right by the airport in Los Angeles, California.
Okay.
And my name is John Coleman, and I'm right here in Gary, Indiana. And I did have the pleasure of meeting Bob.
Yeah, it's good to meet you, too. Your new group is very good. We'll talk about what you're doing now at the end of the interview, too. So, and we're hopefully have a third member coming up soon who will be on the line, too. What's his name?
Doyle Cole.
Okay. And just... as long as we're giving group members names, what was the original group consisted of four people? Is that right?
Correct.
So who was the fourth, or actually, what was the original lineup of the group? Actually,
well, it was myself, Roosevelt.
Okay.
Of course, John Coleman.
Okay.
Doyle Coble's on his way.
Okay.
And Eldred Anthony.
Okay, and they you so you four were the original lineup that are on record, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So. Let's start out by talking about sort of the history group of the group and how you guys formed. So you all formed in Gary, Indiana, is that right?
Yeah, John, that's right, right?
Yeah, that's right, that's right. But, you know, me and Roosevelt had this conversation before, and during the time, I guess we're getting old because a lot of things are forgotten, right, Roosevelt?
Yeah, both of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both of us.
So you guys formed in high school, is that right?
Well, yeah, we, what I remember is, now, John, you tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Okay.
But you tell me. This is what I remember.
Okay.
What I remember is that, you know, John and I had a group previously.
Okay, what was your group?
What was the name of that group, John? Esquires?
Because I talked to a guy who sang in a group called the L. Wands that said either one or some of you sang in his group, too.
Well, yeah, that was for a short period of time. But with John and I, well, John, it was me and you and Edward Griffiths and Eldridge, right?
Yeah. That's how we started. We tried other groups before this then.
Yeah.
But, you know, Roosevelt had heard me.
Okay.
I was a type of a quiet guy. Roosevelt heard me sing with another guy a lot of times, and I guess Roosevelt said, this guy can sing, you know.
So,
but I wasn't singing with any groups or anything like that. I knew I was talented, but I didn't sing with any groups. One thing led to another, as far as I remember Roosevelt, okay?
Yeah.
Roosevelt and Eldridge were starting a group. Now, get me if I'm wrong. You know, I think we talked about this before.
Well, yeah, we were kind of starting a group. What happened was I wasn't singing in a group either. And I was standing in the lobby of the gym singing My Girl. And Eldridge came up to me and heard me singing and said, why don't we start a group? You bring one person, I'll bring somebody.
Right. Okay, now we're on the same page. John.
Right. And I said, I'll bring John.
So was this when you were in high school?
Yeah, we were like juniors or sophomores or something.
We were sophomores.
So I'd like to give the listeners some idea about... I guess the high schools in Gary, because I know in Chicago there were a lot of groups from the west side and the south side. And I know in Gary you had several different high schools, and everyone I talked to is very proud of the high school that they came from.
Oh, yeah.
So what school is your group from in Gary?
Oh, the best one, Tolleston.
Okay.
Of course.
And at the time there were a lot of, I heard that there were a lot of groups from there, and there was also a citywide talent show, is that right?
All the time. Even the Jackson Five were on a lot of these shows also.
Okay.
There was a social kind of a, for lack of a better way of putting it, an organization called the High Y, which stemmed from the YMCA, and every school had a High Y organization, which was some of the boys that were juniors and seniors.
Okay.
And every high school had a High Y talent show.
Okay.
All of the high-wise from different schools had talent shows, but it was open to anybody in the city.
Okay.
So every school that had their, had a doo-wop group that sang on the street corners would show up for the talent shows.
Okay. And I know that was really, I'm just trying to give listeners more context too. That was really big in Gary at the time, right?
Like, you had a lot of people that could sing. You had a lot of competition out there. And it was a big deal. You know, this was big, real big.
Yeah, that was us, the Jackson 5, Denise Williams. I don't know if you remember Kelly Patterson, who had that song,
yeah.
If It Don't Fit, Don't
Force.
We were
yeah.
all singing against each other as kids.
So, I know that, I mean, probably one of the big influences from Gary on all of you were the Spaniels. Is that right?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. Groups like Temptations.
Okay.
Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. You know.
It was a big Motown movement that was going on, and you know, and we all just kind of the way the kids used to break dance in the 90s. We used to stand on the corners and sing doo-wop under the street lamps and sing each other off the corner if we could.
So it was just a big thing that the kids did in Gary back in the day, you're saying?
Yeah.
If you thought you could sing.
Okay.
If you thought you could sing, don't come out there if you can't sing. And if you didn't have harmony. Harmony was a big deal back then.
Yeah, if you didn't have a harmony right, all the girls would laugh at you.
That's right.
Then, you know, then you'd be embarrassed and you couldn't come back on the corner no more.
So you guys had been singing together in different groups for a little bit before then, is that right? Until you formed, you said, in your sophomore or junior year in high school?
Except me. I was kind of a quiet, shy guy. And a lot of people didn't even know that I could sing.
Okay.
And Roosevelt had an ear for music, found out that I could sing, and he kind of took me under his wing.
Okay.
And then he brought me, he told me, he said, well, we're starting a group, and I want to bring you down. Are you interested in singing in a group? And I said, why, yeah, you know. So he brought me, am I correct, Roosevelt?
Yeah.
And as far as I remember, Eldridge brought this guy named Eddie Griffith.
Right.
Okay.
And we all came as one group up in his upstairs in his room. And that's where it all started.
So it was originally Eddie Griffith, Eldridge Anthony, Roosevelt Christmas, and John Coleman.
Yes. And so, we gelled right away.
So,
am I correct, Rosa?
Yeah, we did.
And you said you were inspired by, like, Motown groups of the day, like the Temptations.
Yeah, I like the Temptations. Most of the Motown groups, and can't leave Curtis Mayfield out either.
Okay.
No, you can't leave Curtis out, because Curtis had a whole lot of good, you know, a good songs with good harmony and stuff.
Listen,
that were easy to sing without music.
Yes.
You know,
you remember the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, Fantastic Four. There were a lot of good, there were just a lot of good groups.
Yes, back then, at that time.
I'll bet there.
Okay, and then what part did each of you sing?
Well, I myself, I stuck with, I was a background singer. That was, my claim to fame, because I knew a lot about harmony.
Okay.
And I sung mostly second tenor.
Okay.
Sometimes first tenor.
Okay.
Baritone.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, John sang the lower end of stuff, and it was kind of like, depending on what it was that we were doing and who was leading the song,
okay.
We would, we would kind of do what had to be done. For the most part, the bottom part of the harmony depends on who was leading. With the Passions, was held by Doyle, was held by John and Eldridge.
Okay.
And depending on who was leading the song, the top parts of the harmonies were normally held by me and Doyle.
Okay.
We were so versatile.
Yeah, so anybody could sing just about anything, but it sounded better to us if Eldridge was leading, Doyle would sing the top, I would sing the middle, and Doyle and John would sing the bottom.
Okay.
If I was leading, John would sing the bottom, Eldridge would sing the middle, and Doyle would sing the top. Just depending on, you know, who happened to be leading at that time. And we all led at some point.
Okay, so I think we've been talking a while, and I want to give the listeners a chance to listen to the music that you made to know what we're talking about. So I'm going to play one of your records, and then we can talk some more. I'm going to play the track Just Like a Rolling Sea. Is that okay?
Okay.
So who sings
with me.
Who sings lead on this record?
That's Eldridge.
Okay, so this is The Passions with Just Like a Rolling Sea, and then we'll be talking some more.
All right.
Good man, understanding the warmth of love.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just The Passions with their record Just Like a Rolling Sea. And if you're just tuning in, I'm doing an interview with members of The Passions, who also recorded under the name The New Day, which we'll be getting to later in the interview. So you guys are still there, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so when we left off, we talked about how your group had just formed in high school, and the group originally consisted of Eddie Griffith, Eldridge Anthony, Roosevelt Christmas, and John Coleman. But that ultimately wasn't the lineup that ended up recording, is that right?
That's right.
So what's the story behind that?
Well, we kind of, I don't remember exactly what happened, but after the first talent show that we did, everybody kind of went their separate ways, and I think that's when John and I started screwing around with the L1s. Wasn't it, John?
Yeah, but not for long.
Not for long. And then one day Eldridge came back to me, and he said, look, we need to get our group back together. If you got one guy, you bring one guy, I'll bring one guy.
Okay.
And, of course, I brought John, and he brought Doyle.
Okay.
Who had originally been in that other group I told you about that was kind of popular called the Deltone.
And that's what the discrepancy of is when me and Roosevelt talk, because I don't remember that happening like that with Doyle. But Doyle can explain that if he comes.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, if you remember, John, Eldridge said that, and then he didn't tell us that it was going to be Doyle. Okay. And Doyle, in fact, came and picked us up.
Yeah, you told me that.
And gave us a ride over to Doyle's house, over to Eldridge's house. And then when we got there, Eldridge told us it was Doyle. And when we started singing, it was better than it was before.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, of course it was, because we had Doyle. Doyle was a very good first and fifth tenor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Matter of fact, when he was in this other group, I was saying, that guy is terrific, you know. And then when they told me, we had a manager named Bill Brookins, William Brookins. He just happened to be my cousin.
Okay.
And he told me that we was going to acquire Doyle in our group. I said, wow. And that was the first time I heard that he was going to be with us, Roosevelt.
So he already had a reputation in the city, for being a good singer.
Well, he's very good.
So when you
one of those other groups, the Deltones, that he was the lead singer in that group.
Okay. But they never recorded anything, right?
No, they never did.
So when you guys finally came together in your new group, were you still in high school at the time?
Oh, yeah, we were like, then, at that point, I think it was at the end of our junior year.
Okay.
We was going into our senior year. Matter of fact, all of us graduated together.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were all the same year.
Graduating class of 68.
Okay, and like we said before, you were a Tolleston group, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And were there other groups out of Tolleston that had recorded at the time, or other singers?
Not at the time.
Okay, and what were some? I just wanted to give the audience some of the idea of the scene in Gary at the time, because there were a few high schools there, right?
Yeah.
Like we were talking earlier about how the Jackson Five came out of Roosevelt High School, right?
Right. Uh huh.
What were some of the other schools that some of the other groups came from?
Well, it was Frable.
Okay.
That was Frable, and there was Emerson.
Yeah, the L1s came out of Emerson.
Right.
Okay. So where's Tolleston High School located?
It's on, there's what, 19th Avenue and Taney, is that right?
19th and Taney, yes.
Right.
19th and Taney.
Okay.
Which is pretty much, I kind of like the far west side.
I think that's near where Gordon Keith is, isn't it?
Huh?
I think it's near where Gordon Keith is, I think.
Yeah, not far from where Gordon lived on 11th Avenue and Taney, I think. Yeah, he did, as a matter of fact.
Okay, so you were in high school, and ended up recording a bunch of records. Did you record when you were in high school or after you got out?
No, when we were in high school.
Okay, so you ended up recording, I think, four records. They reused a lot of the sides, but I think there were six songs on Tower Records. So what's the story? How did you get a record deal?
Well, we used to sing out in front of Denise Williams' house.
Okay.
A lot.
And she was Denise Chandler back then,
yeah,
is that right?
Denise Chandler.
Okay.
And I grew the first time Denise and I ever sang together, we were in kindergarten.
Okay.
And we used to sing out in front of her house all the time, because, I mean, John, you remember there were always a bunch of girls over there, Shirley and Tony and everybody.
Yeah,
was over there.
It was about the girls.
Yeah,
the
right. You know, the girls
at school,
you know, all that.
So did Denise live near you? Was she like your neighbor?
Yes,
She lived right around the corner. Denise was like Roosevelt's sister.
Yeah.
She was like sisters and brothers.
Yeah, she lived right around the corner. I mean,
what do you mean sister? Was she related? Was she related to you, or she was just real close? You're saying?
No, her mother treated me. Denise's brother, oldest brother Derek, and I are best friends, and have been for almost 50 years now.
Okay.
And we were just good friends, and he spent a lot of time at my house. I spent a lot of time at his house, to the place where we didn't even knock on the door when we came to each other's house. It was just like we lived there. So,
can I cut in for a minute?
Yeah.
Listen, and tell me if I'm right. Didn't Denise sing with us for a hot minute?
She said, I mean, we tried, me and you and her, and you. Yeah. I think you and I and Denise and Tyrone Stearns, but Denise Denise didn't want to do it, if you remember.
Yeah.
She decided not to, but one day Denise's mother sent her son Donnell around to my house to just tell her, you know, tell him I said come here. So, you know, in those days, if somebody's mother wanted you, you just got up and went. So I went to the house, and she told me, she said, you take those guys that you sing with, and you go down on 15th and Broadway and sing for this guy named Horace Parks, who was her boyfriend.
At the record shop.
Yeah, he owned a record shop, and he was a part-time DJ. So we sang a song called Misty a cappella for him. And he was impressed, and he gave us the number to Leo Austell, the telephone number to Leo Austell and his address, and told us to catch the train from Gary to Chicago and sing the song for Leo.
Okay.
Matter of fact, it was the South Shore.
Yeah.
Yeah, so which the same train that's still there, is that right?
Right, same thing.
Okay, so you came into Chicago and auditioned for Leo Austell.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this was a very exciting event for us.
And he was at VJ Records, is that right?
I suppose. All I know is that we sang the song for him. He got excited and called Hillary Johnson.
Okay.
Hillary came over. Hillary got excited and he called Archie Russell.
Okay.
And all that we know that it was within. Ah, man, what was it, John? 4 or 5 weeks? Maybe not even that long. We were singing background behind Betty Everett on Now Come a Time.
Okay. So around that time, you're singing background on her uni hit, There'll Come a Time, is that right?
Right.
So you recorded that. Do you remember where you recorded in Chicago, what studio?
I think it was at the old RCA studio on Wacker Drive.
Okay, and then that's your first recording before you ever cut your own records, is that right?
Yeah.
So and was Vivian Carter involved with that story at all too? Because I know she brought a lot of Gary artists to VJ and Abner, didn't she?
No,
we didn't come in contact with her. No. But I remember her brother being around.
Okay.
Calvin was in the studio a lot of times.
Yeah.
When we were in there, because he and Leo were friends. But
yeah.
Vivian, we didn't have much to do with Vivian, no.
At all.
Okay, so the first thing you cut, which I forgot to bring, sorry, was you sing backup on Betty Everett's There'll Come a Time.
Correct.
And then did you do any other background work before or after you ended up recording your own records?
We did a couple of Betty songs. Didn't we do a song called Hey Lucinda?
Yeah, but
that's a late 70s song, I think.
When we did Betty's song on There'll Come a Time, we did a lot of traveling. That's when we did a lot of traveling with her, and everybody wanted to hear that record when we traveled with her on stage.
So you toured with Betty before or after you recorded?
We recorded with Betty.
I meant your solo stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and then we recorded our first single.
Okay.
I think Just Like a Rolling Sea about 4 or 5 months later. Before we got out of high school. And then, because I think our record was released in either April or May, right, John?
I believe it was around May.
Something like
that. Of 68 or 69?
Yeah, 68.
Okay.
And then when we all graduated from high school, shortly after that, we went on the road with Betty with her record and ours.
Right.
Okay. So was it a tour of, like, who was on the tour besides you and Betty?
It was just, basically, it was us. And we would always be teamed up, seemed like, with somebody.
Yeah,
you know?
There would always be other stars. Whatever place we got performed, it would be other stars there. I remember performing with Major Lance.
Right. Sam and Dave,
yes.
James Brown.
And
So there would be artists, you know, on the ticket also at the places that we performed at.
And where did the tour go to? Was it in the Midwest? Where did you
mostly
go?
Mostly in the South.
Okay.
Matter of fact, we even toured with Marsha and the Chalets. They were with us in Florida.
Right.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah.
Remember Roosevelt?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So we were doing, I think we would do like places like places like Memphis and Knoxville and Nashville and Beaumont, Texas, and
Oklahoma.
Oh yeah, we did some Tulsa and Oklahoma City.
Yes.
Miami, Washington D.C. What they called at that time, I think they called it the Chitlin Circuit.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it must have been pretty exciting right after high school, just instantly getting to go on tour.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of
fun. Do you have any crazy tour stories?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we can't tell those.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, that's not some of the ones we get. But Leo gave us a road manager once by the name of Eddie Wingfield.
Okay.
And Eddie was like about 50 or something like that.
Yeah.
And when we went on the road with him, and he drove so slow. Until I think one time he got out to get gas, and when he came back, I was sitting in the driver's seat, and Eldridge was in the other car, so we had to get where we were going, and we just drove real fast to get where we had to go. And we were on the road with him with us for about a month.
Yeah.
And when we got back, he was a nervous wreck. He quit. He said, I was
so scared. They bought us a station wagon, right, Rosa?
Yeah, we had a brand new Pontiac station wagon.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
that was, what, 68?
Something like that, 69.
So who was your manager again? Was it Leo Austell, or who was setting all this stuff up?
Well, our manager, we had three of them.
Okay.
Leo Austell, Hillary Johnson, and Archie Ruffel they were partners, and they were the ones that took care of us.
Okay.
Between the three of them, one of them was on the road with us or in the studio with us or setting up your gigs or whatever. It was the three of them. And I think our agent was Dick Boone in New York.
Okay, and they set up all of this touring and all of this,
right,
all the recording and stuff. So let me play another one of your recordings, and then we will talk some more.
Okay.
So what I'm going to play, it actually, you mentioned Curtis Mayfield being influenced. This is actually a Curtis Mayfield song, Just Another Reason.
Right.
And who sings lead on this song?
Doyle Cole.
Okay, well, I'll play it and then we'll come back. So this is The Passions with Just Another Reason. Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. That was just The Passions with their song Just Another Reason. And if you're just tuning in, we are in the middle of an interview. I have two members of The Passions on the phone, Roosevelt Christmas and John Coleman. You guys can hear me, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so that record was cut. So first of all, did you cut all your Tower Records recordings at the same time, or?
No.
Okay, so the first record you recut, I think it was Without a Warning and Just Like a Rolling Sea, or those were your first couple records you cut.
Yeah, I think that was the A and B side, yeah.
Okay, and then, so first of all, do you remember how, like, Tower Records, how you got onto that? It was just through the three managers, they put you on the label, you don't know the story about.
Yeah. Back in those days, you didn't ask questions.
Okay.
The guy was managing you, and he said, you on Tower Records, you on Tower Records.
Okay.
But they explained at the time that was a subsidiary of Capitol Records, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a major label, and there was some other Chicago stuff on it, like Cicero Blake was on that label.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think at least, I'm not thinking of it, but at least one other Chicago thing is on Tower Records.
Might have been the Shy Lights.
Cicero was on there. Lovelace Watkins was on there.
Yeah, he was on Uni Records, which was what Betty Everett was on.
And what was that other guy's name? Was Roy Hightower on there?
He might have been. I don't know if he cut a record on Tower, but
okay.
Yeah. So you cut that record, and then did it get any play in Chicago? I know you said Just Like a Rolling Sea. That was your first sort of hit record that got any play, is that right?
Yeah, it got a lot of play in Chicago, yeah.
Okay, and in Gary, too, you remember hearing it on the radio?
Oh, yeah. WMPP, WVON. Yeah.
And at the time, you guys were still staying in the same places in Gary, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
So you had, how long was the tour that you went on with Betty? How many months did it go for?
Oh, I don't know, what, six,
yeah. Yeah, I would say about 6 months.
Yeah, something like that.
6 months.
So you were on the road for about 6 months, and then you got back home. Did you ever hear your record on the radio when you were on the road?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So,
and especially in the towns that we performed in also.
Okay. You must have been excited, like thinking you're big stars touring and hearing your records on the radio.
Oh, yeah.
So then you ended up going back to the studio and recording a few more cuts for Tower Records, is that right? So you cut that song Just Another Reason, and it was a Curtis Mayfield song. Did you have any interaction with Curtis on it?
No. I think Just Another Reason was cut, I think, the same week or a couple of weeks after Just Like a Rolling Sea was cut, because it was the B-side.
Okay, and you know he reused the record for a girl group he put out, The Fascinations.
Yeah.
Did Just Another Reason get any play on the radio?
Not much. It was a B-side.
So was your biggest hit as The Passions Just Like a Rolling Sea?
No. I think our biggest hit for The Passions, maybe it was. I think our biggest potential hit, though, for The Passions was Hijack.
Okay, and that was, that record I'll play next, that was like a different sound, like a funky kind of Temptations almost sound.
Yeah, that's what everybody thought when they heard it.
And
yeah, as a matter of fact, you remember the Payola scandal?
Yeah.
The Payola scandal's got a lot to do with why Hijack was not a hit.
Okay.
Because it just happened to come out the same month that Cloud Nine came out.
Okay. That's interesting. So, but how did that relate to the Payola scandal?
Well, a guy named Hank Spann in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
Told me he couldn't play our record anymore because certain promoters paid him not to.
Oh, okay.
Because it was too much like Cloud Nine.
Okay.
It was too much competition, and Detroit wasn't having it.
Okay. Yeah, so that's bad. You got screwed by the industry.
Yeah, we did.
There was a lot of power guys.
Yeah, we got screwed by the industry, but that would have been our biggest hit. So I'm going to say, don't you think, John?
Yeah. I listened to that. Rob sent me that CD, and I listened to it in the car. And I really listened to it, and I said, you know what? This should have been a hit record.
Yeah.
So, Roosevelt, you wrote that record.
Yeah, I did.
So that was the last record you cut as The Passions, is that right?
Yes, it is.
Do you remember how much longer it was after you'd been back from your tour that you cut this record?
Let's see. I think we came back. We came back from the first part. The tour kept going for about a year.
Okay.
Am I right, John? For about a year?
About a year. Yeah. Huh?
So we came back after 6 months, and then we did after five, I Can See My Way Through. And the B-side, what was the B-side of I Can See My Way Through?
Well, the thing is that they reused a lot of the tracks as B-sides, so they would just put out the same songs over and over again. But I think total you cut five records total, for five songs total.
So we did I Can See My Way Through. Then we went out again, and then we came back, and we did Hijack.
Okay, and so that was maybe in 69 it came out?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe like a year after you started touring originally, it came out.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, well, I'll play the record, and then we can talk some more. This is The Passions with, it was like sort of a funky type of sound, different than your other records. This is called Hijacked. Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just The Passions with the last record they recorded as The Passions, and it had a funky kind of sound, and it was called Hijacked. And Roosevelt, you said that you wrote that record, is that right?
Yeah, I did. It was back in the terrorist thing that was going on back in those days was kind of when people first started hijacking planes.
Okay. That's actually what the song is about, or?
Yeah, it's not about hijacking planes. I just kind of took the idea of hijacking and just kind of made a new girl hijack me from my old girlfriend.
Okay.
You got lonely.
Yeah.
Didn't have anything to do.
Yeah, there's Doyle.
Hello.
Hi, Doyle, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hello, Doyle, how are you?
Oh, God, I was lost.
Okay, well, now we have.
You got hijacked.
Yeah, I did. I got hijacked myself.
So
I called, and then I realized I can't call because you're on the phone.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's technology getting in the way. So we have the third member of the group. Doyle, what's your last name?
Cole, C-O-L-E.
Okay, and one thing we were talking about earlier that people were arguing about was, could you tell how you joined the group?
How I joined the group?
Yeah.
We talked about me and Eldridge and Eddie and John original, and then you come in. And I didn't Eldridge tell me, I got somebody, you bring somebody, I brought John, he brought you. Now, is that right?
Yeah, that's why I went, as far as I know, because as far as I know, I went to pick them up. I went to pick Roosevelt up because I had a car at the time. I guess we must have been in high school. And I had a car, and I went by his house to pick him up because he lived actually closer to me than, well, except for maybe John. But I went to pick Roosevelt up, and we went to Eldridge's house, and that was the four, because I don't think Roosevelt even knew that I was the one picking him up and was part of the group.
I didn't.
Okay, so and you had previously sang in another group in Gary before, is that right?
Right, exactly.
What was the group?
The Deltones.
Okay, but you guys had never cut a record, right?
No.
Okay, so where we left off, I was playing the last record recorded as The Passions, called Hijacked, and Roosevelt was talking about how he wrote the record. And another thing is that who arranged the record?
Donny Hathaway.
Okay, and Roosevelt told some story about Donny Hathaway hearing him sing the song and just.
We came off the road, man, and I forget where we'd been, but we always checked into the office when we got back into town. So we were down, we were right upstairs from Uni Records, as a matter of fact.
So the office was in Chicago.
Yeah, the office was in Chicago.
So you were traveling a lot from Gary to Chicago. Did you go like all the time, pretty much?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's only 15-minute drive.
Yeah, every other day, every day, depending on when
sometimes
we had.
Sometimes twice a day.
Yeah, sometimes. And, you know, and Hillary says, come with me, and I go into this room where we always rehearsed, and there's this guy sitting at the piano. When he turns around, it's Donny Hathaway. I'm like, oh my God, you know. And he says, sing that song Hijack for Donny. And I sang it. Donny listened to me, so I like that. And he sat down and he kind of played it from what I sang and looked at Hillary and said, okay, I got it. And when we came back off the road,
but I think weren't we all sitting there saying, because we had actually kind of worked out an arrangement.
Yeah. Well, we thought we wanted to
for the song as far as the vocal group concerned. We had worked out an arrangement.
Well, I was in shock.
Based on the Temptations, the idea that the Temptations had, you know, with all of the different leads.
Yeah, the switching the leads.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I was in shock, sir, because it was Donny Hathaway. I probably don't even remember.
Well, I don't know if he was. I don't even know if he was Donny Hathaway at the time.
Yeah, that's what I was asking you before, because he wasn't. He had done a lot of arranging for Chicago things, but I don't even think he cut like the Ghetto yet.
No, he hadn't.
Yeah. So
no, he hadn't, and he hadn't cut that much stuff. I mean, he was still kind of up and coming, but he was definitely very sharp, because he didn't write anything down.
Yeah, I think he cut a record with
singer. I think he was the best lead singer at that point, for my money, that I'd ever heard.
He cut a record at the time with June Conquest. It was June and Donny. He had a song out.
Mm-hmm.
So and then another thing I wanted to ask you was, we talked about how you did some touring with Betty. Did you tour as The Passions also, and did you play a lot of clubs in Chicago too?
Yeah,
well, we toured as The Passions.
Okay.
And we worked in clubs in Chicago as The Passions.
Yeah.
Do you remember some of the
towns? And we go to town with Betty, and it always seemed like shortly after that we'd be going back by ourselves.
Okay, and did you guys have choreography like the Temptations did?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You had to have that, you kid.
That was part of the whole landscape for everything.
Did you guys come up with your own steps, or how did it work out?
Almost definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, we would practice a lot of times in my basement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then I guess the Passions were together for a few years, and you cut a bunch of records, and then ultimately you ended up cutting one more record as the New Day, but I guess there were some lineup changes, is that right?
Well, you basically just, as the New Day, as it turned out, it was only one lineup change.
Okay.
Eldridge Anthony out, Eddie Evans in.
Okay. So, and I know...
What about Doyle? Is that when he went to the service?
Yeah, Doyle was back, though.
Well, I was on that.
Okay, so Doyle...
He was back. I don't know if you were... I think when we cut that record, you were home on leave or something.
Right, but we had arranged that song,
mm-hmm.
and we had an arrangement to go along with... Because by that time, we had kind of outgrown the Temptation format.
Okay.
We the Fifth Dimension and Friends of Distinction and those groups were really popular for us.
Okay.
At that time, and so we did Wait a Minute in that format, but we had an A&R guy to come along and say that was too much singing.
Okay. Well, yeah. So
and he told us that it was too much singing, and they went in and just killed our little arrangement. We had a dynamite arrangement though.
Now that was Vivian. That was Vivian, what's her name?
Carter.
Vivian Carter's brother is the guy that he's talking about now.
Calvin
Carter.
Calvin.
Yeah, Calvin.
Yeah, he was like not, you know, being young as we were, we were kind of on the cutting edge of what was going on at that time. And the Fifth Dimension had come out with Stone Soul Picnic. The Friends of Distinction were doing Grazing in the Grass, and there were a lot of different harmonies that the
older groups
weren't doing.
We could handle all of that.
Yeah, so we were going in that direction.
Okay.
And when Browley Guy wrote that song, wait a minute, it was like really super whack for us. So we redid it with that kind of a harmony structure format. They cut some of it out, but they kept enough of it for it to be okay, I guess.
So who's Browley Guy?
He's the guy that actually originally wrote Wait a Minute.
Okay, so he was just some guy you knew. He wasn't in the group or didn't sing or anything?
No, he was a friend of Leo's.
Well, see, during that time frame, you got to realize there was a lot of songwriters. There was record companies had everybody specialized in one area or another.
Okay.
There was a guy that might have been an arranger, a producer, a songwriter. So that's how, and records were cut up into that many parts a lot of times.
Okay. So let me ask a little bit about the group lineup change. Like you said, Eldridge Anthony left the group,
mm-hmm.
and I know that he actually cut a bunch of solo. He cut four solo records as Al Anthony, and then you replaced him with somebody named Eddie Evans. Is that right?
Yeah. Exactly.
So
we found ourselves in a situation with you know the draft.
Okay, so Doyle got drafted. Is that right?
Yeah, and Eldridge leaving. I only left two of us. So John and I figured if we could get one more voice, we could hang on to Doyle got back.
Okay.
You know, so...
So how did you find Eddie?
Well, Eddie used to be our drummer.
Okay. So you had a band, or it was just when you were touring, he was the guy who played?
Actually, he was our drummer when we were in high school.
Okay.
When we were in high school, everything was live.
Okay.
Okay, so Eddie played drums along with some of the Kenzie brothers who played guitars and stuff. They played for us when we played talent shows.
Okay.
So then after our record was out, Eddie went to, I think he went to Fisk or something and came back and talked to me about wanting to sing. And I'd never heard of Eddie singing before.
So Eddie was in college and he came back to you and was like, I want to sing in your group.
Yeah, I had never heard of him singing before.
He had always had aspirations to sing, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
None that I ever knew of, but I figured, you know, we need a third guy to kind of hold on until Doyle gets here. And Eddie did fine. So we said, okay, right, John?
That's right.
So Doyle, how long?
The rest is history.
Doyle, did you actually have to go overseas?
No.
Okay. So you were drafted, and then you came back, and you guys said you cut the record when you were on leave, is that right?
Basically, yeah.
Okay. So I actually never asked you, how'd you come up with the name The Passions before?
You know what? I told Roosevelt how that started, and... He didn't remember. We had a guy, Eddie Griffith, came up with that idea.
Okay. You don't remember? He just came up with the name pretty much? He just thought of it?
He's laying on the bed, across the bed, Eldridge Anthony's bed, upstairs. He said, well, you know, the tempting temptations, what about the passionate passions? And everybody looked at him and said, that's pretty good.
Okay. And then you just shortened it to The Passions pretty much. So then
I wasn't there then.
So then you changed your name to The New Day after you kind of disintegrated and reformed. Do you remember how you came up with the name The New Day?
Well, I think I thought that one up, didn't I, John?
Yeah, but yeah. I don't remember how you did.
I was just thinking at that point because it was like
it was a new day.
Things were changing. Yes.
Things were changing. Yeah, I mean, you know, it was the whole movement of the time. back in 1969, yeah, I mean, you know, it was a whole movement at a time.
That had to be about 71, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was 70, 71.
71 was a whole movement at a time, though. I mean, everything was changing. Young people were speaking out. Everything was anti-establishment. We were growing our hair out and wearing what we wanted to wear and saying what we wanted to say. So I figured it was a new day.
Okay. So did you change your look too?
Oh yeah.
So did you? Like this record I really like a lot. The Wait a Minute record is my favorite record that you guys did. It has a real. I know you said you were going for like a Fifth Dimension type sound, but it also has a real Chicago kind of sound too. On the record.
They changed all of that from what we had thought of. The arrangement that we put together, they made changes on that, and it ended up being a Chicago sounding record.
Okay.
They really cut some.
So you were originally going for like a.
And it wound up being a compromise.
Okay.
Between the old folks and the young folks, basically,
okay.
is what wound up happening. Don't you think?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Well, let me play the record, and we can talk some more about it. This is The New Day with an excellent record called Wait a Minute.
Wait a minute, wait a minute, girl. Before you walk out that door, oh girl.
Why don't you wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, girl?
Wait a minute,
don't do me like you did before, oh no. It's been so long. Take it over, take it over, girl. Before you make up your mind.
Okay, that was just The New Day with their only record called Wait a Minute. So if you're just tuning in, we have three members of The Passions and New Day on the phone right now. I have Doyle Cole, Roosevelt Christmas, and John Coleman. You guys can hear me, right?
Yes.
So right before we played the record, we were talking about how the song didn't actually come out the way you imagined it would sound like, and when you guys originally sort of did the vocal arrangements yourselves, you were imagining more of like a Fifth Dimension or Friends of Distinction type of sound. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So what was different about it, the way it came out, that made it less like you wanted it to sound like?
Well, there was a lot more. They took all of the harmonies out of me, except for the one line that I think that's in the vamp or close to the vamp. It was a lot of harmonies kind of like that, but they took all of that out, made it a tenor lead and a baritone lead.
Okay, so you wanted it less to be the switching of the two parts and more just everyone singing harmony during the song, right?
Well, for the most part, not as much of, or more of, but we had more background harmonies and things going on during the lead.
Okay.
It wasn't that we didn't want the lead to happen, because the lead was cool.
Yeah.
But they cut out all of the things that we did behind the lead.
Okay.
Which would have made it really happen better for us anyway.
Okay.
So we were, like I said before, we were extremely a harmony group.
Yeah, well, I mean, I really like the song, so I hope you are ultimately at least...
That's not knocking you, Bob.
But I mean, I hope you like it too, to some extent, the way it came out, so...
Yeah, it was a compromise, and you know... So,
and it was cool. No, good song.
So you cut that record, and it came out on a different label, on Top Records.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember about how you got onto On Top Records? Were you still managed by the same people?
Yeah,
it was an independent record deal.
Do you remember who ran that label?
All we know is...
Someone told me once who ran it, I can't remember.
Yeah, back in the day, like Doyle said, people had their jobs.
Okay.
Everybody didn't do everything back then. Singers sang, arrangers arranged, writers wrote, managers managed, and that's what happened.
Okay.
And we were just happy to be there. Yeah, and so the deal said, this is the label that you're on, I'll pay you, we signed a contract for what we were supposed to get. We didn't know too much about the label situation other than Leo hadn't screwed us yet.
Yeah, I think the biggest artist on that label at the time was Bobby Rush, actually. He cut a bunch of records on the label.
Exactly.
And then there was another Chicago group called the Shades of Brown on that label. So then, did the record get any play in Chicago?
Yeah, it got a lot of play in
Chicago. Oh, sure.
Okay. And then, what did you only ever record that one song? Because in the B-side, I think they even reused one of the Passions records as the B-side.
Right.
So did you ever record anything else as the New Day?
No. Not that I can remember, no.
Okay, so and that record came out around 1971, I think, is that right?
Right.
So what's the story? Did the group, first of all, did the group ever tour or perform in Chicago as the New Day?
Yeah, we were
going. Oh yeah, yeah.
I think back then what wound up happening was I think shortly after that we got hooked up with Holly Maxwell, didn't we?
Right after
Holly Maxwell and Slappy White, we were on the Slappy White Review and we did a lot of touring with the two of them.
I heard Holly was from Gary, is that right?
Who is that?
Is Holly from Gary?
Holly Maxwell?
Yeah.
No.
She was from Chicago.
Oh, okay. So then, so you were just touring with her and Slappy White, you were saying?
Yeah, well, Slappy White, you know who that is, right?
Yeah, the comedian.
Well, Slappy had a review.
Okay.
Slappy had a review, and the review was, it was us, Holly, you know, it was us, Holly, and him. Basically, I was the MC, and then after I opened the show, the New Day would come out and we'd sing a couple of songs and Holly would do one and we'd back her up, and at the end of that then Slappy come out and tell his jokes.
Matter of fact, that's when we traveled to Spain, is that correct?
The first time we did an international thing, that's right.
So you actually traveled to Spain, was that in 72?
Around 71.
71, yeah.
Okay.
71.
And so how do you end up traveling to Spain?
With, wait a minute out, and we had changed our whole attitude to a more of a, I guess what was happening during the times. We weren't wearing matching sharkskin suits anymore.
Okay.
We had a lot of hair and, you know, bell-bottom pants and platform shoes and all that. Yeah.
You were all
like we were
mod squat.
Psychedelic looking.
Citywide. It was a citywide, some kind of a citywide tribute with Jesse Cookwood for WWCA.
Okay.
And Al Williams, who was one of the old Step Brothers, was Slappy White's manager.
Okay.
And he walked up to us and asked us, he said it was like in April or so, something, and he came up to us and said, hey, you want to go to Spain in September? We said, sure, so we went.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's...
That was that, you know, and we, well, I guess, were affiliated with them for the next couple of years or so, yeah.
So how, where did you perform in Spain?
At Los Permides, the Pyramid Hotel.
Oh, that's cool. How long were you at the hotel?
A couple of weeks. It's right on the Spanish Riviera.
Yeah.
Right in Malaga.
Costa del Sol. Tourist town.
Yeah, Fuengirola.
So then, and you said you actually worked with that review for about 2 years?
Well, yeah, we did a lot of stuff, though. We toured, did a lot of places in the States, too.
Okay. How come you never ended up cutting another record?
Well, that wasn't, it wasn't that kind of group.
Okay.
We were just, I mean, back in the day, you could make a living without a record if you could sing.
Okay. So you sang sort of songs of the songs that were hits at the time, pretty much?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
It was more of a, Vegas-type trip than the straight R&B thing we have been doing.
Okay. So
show tunes.
Yeah, which fit us, which fit our harmonies. We were enjoying that a little bit more than we had been than the R&B stuff. Because the R&B Temptation stuff, you know, Temptations were getting old.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the sort of type of work that you could get as a performer more than...
Yeah.
So that went on for a few years till about 74, is that right? 73, 74?
72,
actually.
Yeah.
Okay, and then did the group just break up? What happened?
I think I left in around 72 because of, different reasons.
Okay.
Marital reasons.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, a lot of groups broke up just because people wanted to settle down or get married, start a family.
Right.
And then did you guys try to stay together for a little bit, or did you just break up after that?
Well, me and Doyle stayed together.
We stayed together.
We always been together.
And
okay.
We work. We actually started a rock group after that.
In Chicago?
Yes.
What was the name of your group?
Well, we had 10 High.
Okay.
And we worked out of Curtis Mayfield's office with Ted Allen. We ended up working with almost every agent in the Midwest for a while.
So
we did a rock and roll thing for the next 4 years, 3 years.
Five.
Yeah, 4 or 5 years, yeah.
So you were just a touring rock group called 10 High.
Right.
And Eddie Evans had left the group too?
No.
Eddie was with us.
Okay, so Eddie was in your group.
I'm the only one that left at that time.
So Eddie played, did he play drums in 10 High?
No.
Okay.
He sang.
Okay. And then...
We had a kind of a Three Dog Night looking group. We had three guys out front with a rhythm section.
Were you,
and we even had horns at one point.
Yeah, and horns at one point.
Were you an all black group, or were you a mixed group?
Mixed.
Okay.
Very mixed.
At one point there were four white guys, three blacks, a Mexican, a Sage Indian, and an Irish.
Yeah, and I know Gary had another kind of mixed group, rock soul group, the World Column at the time, right?
Right.
So then you just played as 10 High around Chicago and around the Midwest pretty much?
Basically, we did for a lot of years. We worked for a group called Let Us Entertain You.
Okay.
They had clubs. They had clubs in Ann Arbor and Champaign Urbana and East Lansing, and
they even had one in Arizona.
Yeah, we never went, but they had it in Omaha. They had at Iowa State at the Iowa City, and we worked for them. Basically playing Big Ten college towns.
Did you play at like fraternities or just shows on campus for the college
kids? We played a lot of clubs. We played the club work.
Okay, yeah. And college.
We used to play Mothers, Rush Up, Rush Over, all of that down on Division Street.
Okay. Yeah, I mean this is interesting to me just because I've never talked to anyone who played sort of a rock circuit. Before.
Yeah.
When you played college towns, it was just college kids came and saw you pretty much?
Basically.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay. And you would do like rock songs that were out at the time, or you had originals too?
We had originals, and basically what we were doing was kind of the horn sound was in.
Okay.
Chicago, Cold Blood, Tower of Power, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Edgar Winter kind of sound and stuff, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's basically the stuff that we did. At that point, it was kind of like, because it was us doing the singing and them doing the playing.
Okay.
It was kind of like a marriage between rock and roll and soul, kind of,
right.
Wouldn't you say?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. So then, so that went on for a few years, and then, John, you weren't involved with music for a while, were you?
For a long while.
Okay. And then the 10 High, did you break up in the late 70s pretty much?
Yeah.
Mid-70s,
yeah.
And then you two guys moved out to California, is that right?
Right.
Exactly.
And did you continue to pursue music?
Oh, yeah.
Most definitely.
What have you done since 10 High?
Jeez. All kinds of
stuff. We had a record deal on RSO, which got botched up for us.
So was it supposed to be just you two, or?
Yeah,
just the two of us. We had a duo thing. Yeah.
Well, we did some stuff like we did some recording with Barry White and Sweet Inspirations and some of the guys out of Rufus that had a group and a lot of things we did.
So are you actually on their recordings, like on some Barry White recordings or?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you did backup for other singers too, is that right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I did, you know, commercials and movie soundtracks, bunch of stuff.
Okay.
You know, stuff that I probably can't even remember.
Okay.
We're making a living.
Yeah, I know a lot of people left Chicago at the time, and because like the music industry was sort of dying in Chicago, and they went out to L.A.
Right.
So that's pretty much the reason you left, just because of the better opportunities in L.A.?
Right.
And I wound up going full circle and singing. I was back with my good friend Denise Williams for about 10 years.
Okay, and you sang backup for her?
Well, yeah, and, you know, the song, she and Johnny Mathis had a falling out, so she needed somebody to sing Too Much, Too Little, Too Late.
Oh, on tour, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I did that, you know, until I guess, until the last tour I did with Denise was the Let's Hear for the Boy tour in about 85.
Okay.
Something like that. And then we did her first gospel album. And I don't think we've done anything after that.
Okay. And then, so are you still doing music today?
Oh, yeah. I'm a minister now.
Okay.
I'm a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ, and I do gospel music. That's what I do. I teach gospel music. I direct choirs and praise teams and all that kind of stuff is what I do.
Do you have a gospel choir that's recorded any music, too?
Not right now. I did a lot of things with Edwin Hawkins and Walter Hawkins and Daryl Coley and a bunch of people.
Okay. And Doyle, are you still involved with music at all?
Yeah, I just got back last week from Australia. I'm with the thing called Motown Magic. I work for Legends International, a company out of Las Vegas.
Okay.
And I have a Four Tops group.
Okay.
And I also do, I've been doing, I just worked last night at a wedding, casuals.
Okay. Which Four Top are you?
I'm Levi Stubbs.
Okay.
If there should be one.
Oh, really?
Yep.
And then John.
Yeah, we just finished touring New Zealand, Australia. We've been to Germany. We've been to the Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico. We're basically on a mini world tour, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, John, you're singing now too, is that right?
Yeah, I sing in two groups. I'm with the Gary Civic Chorale, which is a So they do show. We do show tunes, gospel tunes. We, you know, that type of thing. And you heard my other group. That's how I met you.
Yeah, what's
I have a little something over Doyle and Rosa because I've seen you. I've met you. You were at one of our shows. And the group I'm in now is called Just Friends. And you can vouch for me. We're pretty good.
Yeah. You guys were tight. And you actually have some other members of some legendary Gary groups in your group now, right? Like some of the Goldenrods are in your group.
Yeah.
And
we have a guy, our bass singer, sings with the Spaniels also.
And one of the guys in your group was in the Senators and the World Column,
yeah,
and the Valiants.
Yeah, Elroy Bridgman. Yes.
And and do you know, is Eldridge Anthony singing at all? Or was he involved with, I know he cut some solo stuff. Did you know if he did?
I talked to Eldridge last month. He said he was doing some things with some kids, but professionally or anything like that, I don't think he's doing
anything. Yeah, I don't think he is. I think John, he's doing kind of like what I'm doing. I think he's working in church, too.
And do you know what happened to Eddie Evans?
Eddie I talked to about 10 days ago.
Okay.
Eddie's in Denver, but I don't think he's doing much singing.
I thought he was, well...
I think you're right.
Okay, well, I got to say thanks so much for being on the air and telling your story.
I'm glad to do it.
Do you have any last words for the audience?
Well, the only thing I can say is this. You know what? If any of you guys out there sing, be true to the art and don't let the business get a hold of you. Just be true to the art. If you're going to sing, sing.
And enjoy yourself doing it.
Yeah, have fun. And then come see us, too, if we're in Las Vegas.
Yeah, if you come into Chicago ever, I'll let me know and I'll announce your date that people can go see.
Yeah, and Bob, thanks for caring about what we did, too.
Yeah, really. I'm so glad that this warms my heart.
Yeah,
if somebody cares about what we did, because we really loved it when we were doing it.
That's right.
Well,
I appreciate you.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much great music, and that era is gone. Like, I just think it's important to preserve it, you know?
Yeah.
So, okay, well...
And Bob, I will be contacting you about some things.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks so much. And the listeners, if you want, you can listen to the interview tonight. It'll be on my webpage, www.sittinginthepark.com. And thanks again.
All right.
All right.
Okay,
thanks.
Bye.